go to treecanada.ca.
This is the Amanda Galas. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hello, hello. It is about the time for another episode of Pirate Lock Radio here at CKUT 90.3 FM. Behind the microphone, there's me, your host, Malte Leander, speaking to you from Jejage, also known as Montreal, located on unceded indigenous lands. Today, I'm guiding you through a mishmash and potpourri of interviews, all related to this year's edition of the renowned MuTech Festival, which Eastern Bloc has had the pleasure to collaborate with. Over the past little while, I've spoken to some of the people part of the stacked program of the festival, which takes place here in Montreal between the 23rd to 28th of August. We will jump in between a few different talks today, and you'll hear interviews with Liliane Schlela, Iki Magdala, Tim Gowdy, and Sarah McKenzie. There's a few more interviews part of the series available for you released during the month of August, so keep an eye out for them on the MuTech SoundCloud page and on their website to catch them as they come available. That being said, let's jump right into it today. I'm Malte Leander, and you're about to hear a conversation together with Liliane Schlela, Lebanese producer and hybrid DJ, a multifaceted creator with the current home base here in Montreal, with one foot in Beirut, all whilst maintaining a busy touring schedule. But here we are now in your home here in Montreal, where you're just sticking around for another few days before the next travels.
Yes, hi, and welcome to my humble abode.
A humble living. Also, Liliane, your most recent album is titled Safala, a heavy album of dark electronic beats, blending gritty distortion with softer soundscapes, much of it being a reflection in audio form upon the past few years of tense series of events and political situations Lebanon has seen. But from what I understand, this album was produced during quite a short period of time. Can you talk a bit more about what was the triggering event for you to start this process or producing this record?
It was actually a quite fast production phase for this album. I mean, for even the rest of the albums too, producing it took about, I mean, for my part, not the mixing and mastering, it took about a week or two tops. And there was no specific trigger for it. And that's how I usually work. I just obey to, you know, I abide by whatever I feel the need to work on something. So it's not really planned or it's not really triggered by something. But of course, it is directly related to whatever was happening in Beirut. And now it's even worse than before. It's not a direct reflection, of course. It's not a textbook kind of...
From a personal standpoint and angle. Course.
Yeah. And yeah, so the production phase took about a week or two. Then the mix and master, and it took a little while, but here we are. A year and a half later, with the album.
So, I mean, it's not only, as you're saying, political and social commentary, but Safala also holds personal links to ancestors and family, as some building blocks to the album is tying back to your grandmother, if I understand it. What's the story behind that?
Sure. The titles of the album, Safala, actually come from an incantation my late grandma used to say to me and to, you know, the rest of my family. It was just some sort of prayer to, chase off the evil eye or You know, it was just kind of a cute bond that we used to have, that she always used to, you know, say whenever I was feeling down or feeling a bit low. So it was just a bit something to hold on to for a little while. And so, as I said, these titles are taken from that pair, let's say. And the way the album actually reacts to itself and the way the sounds interact with each other or completely break each other have to do with the notion of good and evil and how these two entities react and destroy each other or morph into each other based on these building blocks, actually.
Right. Whilst approaching your process of composition for this album and the past, it seems like improvisation is something that is allowed to take place in both in your performances and building live sets upon a range of different sound sources. But with the latest album, as you mentioned, you know, having heavy connotations upon some important and sensitive topics, I'm curious to hear how your thoughts on being able to maintain this tension and focus while still allowing for this spontaneous exchange, perhaps in a live performance.
Mm-hmm. My musical background basically has always been centered around improv, be it in all my life and collective projects or solo projects. I've spent a lot of time performing live with different musicians coming from very different musical backgrounds. And most of these projects, if not all of them, were always based on live improv. So in a way, the way my brain works is mostly related to that, to how I could be able to translate anything, on the spot into sounds, into different passages, into different interactions with different people. So this process to me is what I make sure to always keep while producing. Of course, I'm not improvising while producing the entire album, of course, but the process of how I think about things and how I try to translate that or transcribe that is what I think is my signature process, or in a way, sound also. Going back to the live performance itself of this album, especially that this performance is a live audio video. So we had a video art specifically produced for that album that actually completes the entire album and the entire live experience. Donc, I don't have a lot of margin per se to really go fully.
Okay, you still had to adhere to the visuals or the structure of that?
Of course, because it follows a specific narrative and specific passage that go from place to another. Because this was also the process of how the video art was produced. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I leave a bit of margin for me to add and interact with sounds live, but it's not as free as I would like it to be in an ideal situation, of course.
I understand. And with quite the recent relocation, now we're sitting here in Montreal, how do you feel this change of environment has affected perhaps your music and art making now being in a different space?
That was a very violent shift. A very violent move. I was lucky enough to be able to come here, of course, because not everybody else had the privilege to escape, let's say. Coming here on the musical, just from a musical perspective, I think this has given me the time and the space to actually look back at everything that I have been producing and doing, and really taking the time to analyze whatever I was producing. Not review, but analyze, because in Beirut, everybody's always running on troubleshoot mode, so you don't really have that space nor time to actually think about these things, like really think about these things. So coming here really was super tough to actually be able to face these things for the first time. It's a bit weird for me to actually talk about it right now over the radio, but still, it was a bit weird for me to actually see and hear, like, with a bit of distance, what was actually coming out of me musically. So it's an interesting process, an ongoing process, of course. But yeah, it's pretty interesting, honestly, to me as a personal work.
Well, yeah, just taking a step back is, and in this case, a geographical one, putting a lot of space in between does allow for a time of reflection. Could be either positive or negative, or both at the same time, probably. Mm-hmm. But if you, yeah, looking in the back mirror, I guess, I'm curious to hear if there's any specific milestones that has been most important to you as an artist or a performer, or when mentioning sort of highlights, what comes to mind for you?
I guess as a career, let's say, entre guillemets, of course, because I don't like to use that word.
Sure.
As a career, I think releasing three solo albums with no label, no manager, no support whatsoever, no funding, no nothing. Actually, just one. I had a tiny bit of funding from Beirut. And still being able to perform and always remaining true to myself, to my principles, to everything I believe in without compromising anything. I think that for me is really important. It's not about me making it on my own and all that. That's whatever. But I mean, the actual possibility that I had and that I made sure to, you know, to actually produce was the fact that there's always a way, another way of doing things. And that for me is always an interesting path to go to or to think about, let's say. And maybe, just maybe, try to figure out another collective way of thinking about these things, you know, or seeing these things from different perspectives. So that for me is something. And also the collective that we formed in Beirut for female and the LGBTQI plus non-gender conforming society in the music scene. That for me was a very, very big milestone. It's still ongoing work. There's so much to do and so little time. But that for me also was a milestone.
For sure. That's a good range of different types of achievements, both for you individually, but for other communities that need those type of initiatives as well. So we talked about what's in the back mirror, but I'm curious to hear if we're looking ahead with the eyes to the horizon instead. You mentioned just before I hit record that you're eager to start working on new material, but what else lies ahead for you? When putting the eyes onwards.
Hopefully, I have a few dates. Where I'll be touring, like mini touring. I just have a few dates in Europe. Again, crossing fingers and everything else. We get the visa on time, because also mobility as an artist with a Lebanese passport is never easy,
right?
As always. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm performing to a totally new audience and in venues of different sizes. For instance, Roskilde Festival in Denmark, Le Guess Who in the Netherlands, Mutech here, of course, and that's going to be a premiere. And that was something like really funny for me to see my name in that lineup. Whereas Mutech for me had always been like this very distant dream, like, oh, Mutech. But I mean, it's funny to see that here. Now, I have a couple of dates also here as a DJ, playing as a DJ here in Montreal. I'm also playing Picnic in September. What else? There were a couple of more dates, but I forgot about them. But yeah, and there's also hopefully going to be a surprise coming out in early autumn.
Okay. Well, keeping our eyes and ears open for all of those things upcoming then. You also mentioned the Mutech performance being an audiovisual set, including both the visual elements, as you mentioned, alongside the approaches that we've talked about, improvisation and your manipulation to sound. You also mentioned a sort of premiere, but I'm interested what we can expect of this combination in the context of the festival. Can one ask, is there ideas of how that would look like, or what one can expect to see and hear?
I'll be performing my latest album, of course, Safala, but I'm also going to be introducing compositions from my last EP, and it's called Malign Benign. But the sounds there are as harsh as Safala's, of course, but they're more on the deconstructed club kind of, world. And this also would be a hint to the performance that is coming after me. Because, okay. Yes, of course, we're here to experience that and that, but we're also, ready to stomp a bit. And that is something that I'm willingly going for at Mutech, trying both sounds in the same performance, mm-hmm. And a longer performance than I usually perform during. And I'm really hoping that it goes well.
The way it's planned, too.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm looking forward to that.
Yay.
You just heard a talk with Lilian Schlela performing at this 23rd edition of the Mutech Festival. You can catch her as part of the Play 3 event, August 27th at Société des Arts Technologiques. I'm Malte Leander, and here you will hear me talk to Iki Magdala, a veteran in the Montreal scene with over 10 years behind the decks in a wide span of contexts, both as a solo artist and performer, as well as with a number of collectives, spinning everything from dub and hip-hop to jungle, drum and bass, and acid techno. Today, she's paid me a visit in my apartment in Villeray, escaping one of Montreal's heat waves. How are you doing today, Iki?
I'm very good. How are you?
Good, thanks. So you've been part of the scene for a while in, as I said, a variety of different initiatives, such as Loop Sessions and Pull Up Selecta, to name a few, with over a decade present as both artist, producer, and DJ. How would you say that your approach to music making has changed over this time?
Thank you for the introduction. When I first started, I started as a DJ, so mostly using turntables. I started not with an initial plan to become a DJ, it's just I've always been into music, and eventually I got myself turntables and started that way. And that's it, I started more as a DJ, but then with meeting different people and getting more interested in the electronic music spectrum, because there's a lot of subgenre in that style. Meeting other people, starting buying equipment. I started jamming with other people, and that's how I mostly got into music production. Then I also had a computer, and it was easy to get like softwares such as Reason, Fruity Loops. But I always preferred the hardware aspect, just, you know, hands-on playing with the equipment and also jamming with other people. So that's why I, even to this day, I'm more into those kind of music making machines and patterns. So that's an overall how I started in the music field.
Right. And the context that I just mentioned, loop sessions being a great
yes.
place for a community of like-minded producers that sort of
yeah.
supports one another, and,
for sure.
and a great place for emerging
sure.
producers in Montreal.
Yeah, Loop Session is like a nice community. It's also a nice school, if I can say it that way, because I pretty much got into Loop Sessions at the really beginning. So I got to meet people who to this day are still like very close friends. And I also say it's a school because, you know, you had a task. Basically, you get in at whichever time, and you have the challenge of producing a beat in X amount of hours. You know, you have like a few hours to produce and present the beat. So I say it's a nice school because in production, usually, you know, you have time to do your stuff, get back to it, you know, sleep on it and get back to it tomorrow. But
here it's like against the clock.
Exactly. It's against the clock. And also there's no right or wrong move. Everyone is so welcoming, so supportive. You go there in front of people, do your beat, and people are there cheering you on. And so it was a nice school and a nice community to get to know people, and also to get like more comfortable doing it in front of people and just, you know, taking the stress out and just putting the music in. And it's a super, super fun experience. And I full support to Loop Sessions. I hope they go on forever. And I'm super happy now there, because we had COVID. We're still a bit in it still, but now we're gonna go and have the event with people again, so that's pretty cool.
Back in person.
Exactly, yeah. But they were super smart about it. Like during the pandemic, they didn't got discouraged by the fact that we couldn't see each other. They put it on an outline online platform where people logged in, grabbed the beats, not the beats, but the original material, the songs, and they got to produce at home. And then at a certain time, everyone presented their beats. So it's the same formula, but they were able to still live during
like
the...
Like a distant version
exactly,
of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, shout out to Loop Sessions
yep.
there. And so with your practice changing forms over the years, like it has, what would you say is a particularly defining or important moment at a time for you as Iki Magdala, as a performer and artist?
Ooh, it's hard to say, like one significant moment.
Yeah, something that comes to mind.
I would say a big one was, when was it? At the beginning of the pandemic. That's like my reference.
Yeah,
it's like
sure.
before, after Jesus Christ type of thing. a little before the pandemic, I got invited with some of my crew members from Tekon Acid Crew. We were invited to play at FME. Which is like a huge festival here in Quebec in terms of like new artists coming in. So I would say that's pretty a big move for myself and the collective. So I think I have to mention it. That's the first one that comes to mind, but there's been so many opportunities that fell my way. So I'm really, really thankful for everything that every opportunity that I've got so far, and there's some coming still. So I'm really blessed and happy to be living it, you know.
No, that's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned before too that you have this preference for hardware, the sort mm-hmm. of hands-on as opposed to software and music making. Can you talk a bit more about this preferred process, perhaps, when approaching the practice? Does it differ a lot between your live performances or how you would work in the studio? I'm curious to hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, playing live is a challenge in itself, and also it gives me like liberty to just do it, you know. Personally, I'm not a big fan of recording, because every time I know like the, you know, record play is on, I stress over having it perfect every time. But the live sets is something else, you know. It's like I could play the same set, 2 days. The first day is going to be something, and the next day is going to be something else. Even though they're my tunes, they're my productions, there's always a live feel to it, which I enjoy. And I guess it's part of me, because when I look back at it, you know, with starting with turntables, there's also the live feel to it, you know, hands-on on the records and everything. And I guess I naturally chose the hardest way to do music. And I don't know, I just like plugging stuff and hands-on, having like different machines where I can, you know, sample things and then play on the synth, play with different bass lines, effects as well. So there's just a general feeling in the live set that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it introduces more dynamics, and as you're saying, it does become alive and changing from time to time. Even when presenting or working with the same material, you can never really replicate
exactly
the same process.
Mm-hmm.
So the culture of sound systems that you mentioned briefly, I mean, that has a historically a close linkage to some of the music that you're playing. I mean, apart from dub, also with ska and reggae music, how present would you say that those movements or communities are here in Montreal?
Very much present. There's a few sound systems that I know of that are active in Montreal or in Quebec. I could say that's mostly the territory, the area that I know. But there's a few nice initiatives and collectives that either get together to, form parties where there would be like different rooms with different styles, and everything is like self-managed. You would have like, let's say, more bass sounding sound or a more techno psy sound. But all of those come from the same root, you know, like bass. I mean, sound system culture originally, it's like more in the dub reggae scene. But then we can see in Europe where the techno scene, you know, emerged a bit. So it's that same general feeling of building your own sound, being autonomous in that sense. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm at, and that's also what I support 100%.
For sure. And you know, now that creates a great ecosystem of input and output, and everyone that is part of that can very much mm-hmm. take part and harvest the fruit from that
for
labor.
Sure.
So you said that there's a couple of things perhaps in the line that lies ahead. So I'm curious to hear about any future music projects and initiatives, or what would you say lays next for Iki?
Oh, yeah? Okay. What's coming up next? I want to work on an EP that's going to come out eventually. I'm not...
To be determined.
Yeah, to be determined. I was supposed to release it in the past, but then a few things happened. Our schedule changed a bit. It only leaves more time to make it better and to do it right. So there's that coming out, an EP. And also with the sound system culture that I'm into, I'm going to try to... one of my project is to build a sound system as well. So super excited about that. I'm learning a lot. I've learned a lot. So now I want to try to do it myself as well with some close friends. So that's in the works. And also just to continue making music, hopefully to continue traveling a bit with my sound and see what else can happen for myself, you know.
That yeah. sounds like a great great number of different things.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm looking forward to catching it further on.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
You've listened to a short but sweet conversation with Iki Magdala, whom you'll be able to catch at this year's MuTech Festival, where she'll be performing a live set on August 24th as part of the experience series on Esplanade Tranquille.
I'm Malte Leander, and this episode is all about T. Gaudi, composer and audiovisual artist, with his work featured in a number of contexts, both here in Montreal, as well as with numerous installation works and performances across Poland and Germany, where he's now tuning in from at his home in Berlin. Tim, how are you holding up?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So the work that you will be performing as part of the festival this year is titled Aufhebung, challenging the dynamic that exists between performer and audience, partly by, if I understand it correctly, surrounding the listeners within a configuration of a multi-channel loudspeaker system. Mm-hmm. What is it about approaching the audience, or perhaps making the performer less separated from the audience, that you find interesting to address?
For me, I think where this is coming from is I'm just trying to explore the context itself of the concert, because it seems like each time I play, each time I see a concert, it's generally in the same using the same dynamic, where there's a crowd, the public, who is watching the performer on stage. And this sort of dynamic is something that we just accept. And part of my practice is to sort of continually challenge accepted forms of behavior, I guess, or habit, really. And so when I started stripping things away and stripping things away, then you're left with the concert, the formality of being at a concert where there is a performer and there's an audience. And so in this show, I'm trying to play with that a bit and seeing if there's any room to play with it, to play with the expectation of the audience, to play with the disturbance that it causes in people's, in both the public's and in the artist's consciousness, because you're doing something that doesn't feel like it's the right thing or something. Yeah, so these are the types of things that I'm really interested in. So it seemed to me like a natural progression to start playing with that.
Right, and just the physical setup of an actual stage existing is as you're saying in a traditional concert setting already sort of elevating the artist or performer from the audience itself. So sort of leveling that out definitely plays or challenges that hierarchy.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is that I don't know how it's going to work, because this is actually the first time that I'll be doing it. I'll be rehearsing, you know, the technical configuration of how the setup will be, but in terms of the reception and, you know, the feeling of it, I'm not sure how it's going to be, but I think it could be interesting. And like you say, also, the elevated nature of the artist, I'm a bit uncomfortable with that, especially coming from the world of sound, where, I mean, when you go to a concert, it is true that sometimes you are gazing upon the artist and watching them work, where whether it be playing an instrument or adjusting, you know, knobs or whatever, dancing or speaking or singing. But in the end, you are listening, and that is a big part of it. So I'm trying to bring the attention back to that and away from the visual aspect of it. And it's a bit ironic because I am an audiovisual artist and I do a lot of audiovisual shows, but this one's not that. And I want to like sort of turn it on its head a bit. So that's my, yeah, that's my intention.
Very interesting. So the term or the title Aufhebung relates to this process between two conflicting or contrasting things resolved or resulting in the emergence of a new idea, a sort of synthesis process, perhaps one could say. How does the title relate to the performance or perhaps the content or the process in conceiving the work?
Well, in fact, the title relates to the content, and the content is coming from the latest release that I've put out called Miracles with Constellation on June 3rd. And Aufhebung is the word that Hegel used. Hegel was a philosopher at some point. And he used this word to describe this process, this the synthesis of three things, where you start with an original idea and then you consciously move away from it towards something else. And then you come back to the original idea with the moving away. So the moving away comes back and creates a new part, a new thing. And I was exploring that on the album, and I want to present that material. So in a way, I'm doing two things. I'm presenting this material, and I'm also exploring unorthodox way of presenting a live show.
So presenting material from the album, but in a sort of a new format, or recontextualizing it in a way.
Yeah. And there might be ways where I sort of marry the two. But the rehearsals are still ahead of me, and I am someone who likes to leave things open sometimes. So we'll see as to how far down that path I go with mixing Aufhebung and this performance setup.
Right.
I'm not sure yet. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were stripping away visuals from this performance, or being an audiovisual artist. How does that look like, or where does that choice come from when the visuals are taking up perhaps a large part of your practice in other contexts?
Visuals are something that I love and I don't love, or I guess the other word is hate, love and hate. I love how they can enhance a performance and bring it alive and enable the public to hear the sound more. Or it really, a good audiovisual performance is really strong, but sometimes I think the visuals detract from the sound, or you're watching instead of listening. And I just wanted to avoid any possibility of having a mix-up in terms of what senses were happening before another sense, what sense is happening before another sense. Yeah, I just wanted to explore only sound on this one. Yeah.
Great. So you just mentioned also the release of your newest album that came just in June this year of 2022, titled Miracles, which is also your fourth solo album in the counting.
I think it's actually the fifth. I released one independent. I released it on my own.
Okay.
In the 8th of June, I think it was 2017 or something.
Right.
18, yeah.
So the fifth solo album in the counting. And a work that is based off of source material deriving from an older project or an audiovisual project around surveillance footage. How does this album link to or stand out from the past four then that you've put up over the past few years?
I think on the surface, this album stands out because it might be the most, it might be the most agitated. I guess that would be the best word. My previous albums were more ambient in nature. The last one was maybe along the lines of minimal, and due to the equipment that I'm exploring at the moment, I think I always knew that this was coming, and it was just the right time to make this record, this a more glitchy, rhythmic, fast. I'm working at faster tempos. I don't know. This is, I feel like this is maybe the most me, in fact. It took me a while to get there, but this is the one that maybe represents me the most. Yeah. So I'm happy about it, actually. I didn't even know that it was happening this way until one day I looked in the mirror and this was the record. So it was kind of a surprise to me as well. Yeah.
That's great that a later one in the counting feels closer to home, or that it resonates with your own persona of where you're at currently. Yeah. I mean, if one peaks earlier in their life or career, then it's a good feeling to continue to build, I guess, upwards and onwards.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I'm curious to hear a little bit about how the music and a live performance setting compares to perhaps the composition and studio process. Is there similar things or similar processes in between these two parts of your music making?
It's a good question because it's something that I struggle with, but also really, really enjoy, the duality of composing and performing. One of the things that I do when I compose actually is perform. I often just record to a stereo file and then edit that at a later date, because I don't want to have all the options to adjust it. And getting comfortable with this process helps me perform sort of in the same way. But the thing about a performance is that all the settings need to be at the right spot for you to kind of get into that, get the good material. And that's not always the case, because it takes a lot of time and reflection to put the settings at exactly the right spot on the hardware. So what I end up doing is analyzing what I did for a particular piece, and then try my best to emulate that with the gear, with the equipment again, and go from there and try to obtain the spirit of the song, not so much all the little bits and the right moves. And it's more about just capturing the feeling and the spirit that I wanted to capture on the album or on that particular track. And that tends to work for me. If I can go with the spirit and the feeling, then I'm on the right path. And if I'm trying to emulate and mimic exactly the right cues and ups and downs, then no, it doesn't work so much. So that's usually my compass, I think.
It does sound like an allowing approach to choose bigger brushes and sort of have this macro view upon the structure or getting through the most foundational things as opposed to the little nitty gritty.
Yeah. And another thing I'm finding out is that if you just let go of trying to get back to something in the same way, then you have all sorts of new paths that open up that you have to also be choosy about which you're going to take. Yeah, so it's kind of like life. It's a continued, you're always confronted with choices.
That's it.
No matter what.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so Miracles, this latest album is, as I said, with source material deriving around surveillance footage. I'm curious to what other themes or topics that you're perhaps inclined to dive deeper into as of recently. Has there been new thoughts that have been emerging in your process, or or directions that you're curious of taking?
Well, I'm very much interested in Baroque music these days, actually. So I'm turning back my attention to that time period, mostly. So I listen to a lot of Baroque music, and I'm also interested in the way that our landscape is beginning to appear like walls of screens everywhere. I think on my latest video, I sort of expressed that, and how that influences us and how we influence it, and it becomes this feedback loop. So I'm always interested in, I think I'm really plugged into the way that, I guess this ties into the record, how, you know, surveillance is just part of our life now. And it's really down to it's right down to our, you know, it's there when we're taking a shower, it's there when we're eating, it's there, it's just there. And we just accept it.
Yeah.
And I find that fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I like to play with that. So I think that this is a continued theme, and I think it turned up on Miracles on this last record in a more prominent way. And who knows how it's going to turn up again. I think it's just omnipresent in my life, and so I can't really avoid it, that topic, actually.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, for taking the time to shine a bit of light on leading up to your performance and also about your latest album.
That's been my pleasure.
This was a conversation together with T. Gaudi, performing at this year's MuTech Festival on August 25th as part of the fully loaded lineup of the Play One performance at the Société des Arts Technologiques here in Montreal.
You're listening to an interview series for this 23rd edition of the MuTech Festival, a series of panels, presentations, and workshops over 4 days around digital creation is the part of the festival titled MuTech Forum. With me today, I have Sarah McKenzie, director, creative producer, and journalist, with a finger on the pulse on a wide array of contexts around technology, design, and new media, to mention a few. And as part of the festival, she's moderating panels and presentations and will be guiding the program as host for the week. Thanks for taking the time to chat, Sarah.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
So the Friday program, the last day of the MuTech Forum, runs under the theme Music Matters, touching on topics such as sustainability, accessibility, and diversity in live music. Could you give us a rundown as to what to expect from this series that you've set the program for?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the third year that I've worked with MuTech, and It's kind of interesting because this is also the first year after the pandemic, you know, becoming a little bit more, how would I say this? The pandemic, us becoming a little bit more habituated to the pandemic. I don't want to say that it's over because who knows, it's probably not. But it's the third year I've been working on the festival, and I haven't really seen the festival from the back end perspective fully come to life. So, for example, working on the forum last year and the year before, everything has been either virtual or with like a really small audience in place. So this year, in terms of programming, it was really important to celebrate the fact that we can all be in person together again to have these discussions. So it kind of provides a whole new layer to the dialogue that can be had in this type of context, in like a forum type context. So building on that, on Friday, which is the 26th of August, the entire day, all the activities and all of the sessions are focused around music industry from various perspectives. And we have a keynote presentation planned, two panels, and then a workshop that's kind of associated with one of the panels that will actually be held on the Wednesday, the 24th of August. But all that to say is that the Friday is dedicated towards the Music Industry Day. And looking at different topics, the topics range from, I mean, you kind of set it up nicely, but it ranges from the future of live music, Web3, metaverse. We're talking about accessibility and safety and electronic music, diversity and inclusion, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so putting the pieces together, and you mentioned like celebration, what fundamental building blocks felt important to put together as a foundation for making that happen?
Yeah, I think that, not to say the pandemic or the P word again, but I think the pandemic has really changed a lot of our habits as music listeners when it comes to how we engage and consume music from like a streaming or like a consumer's perspective, and also from a live music standpoint. But it also has created a bunch of really interesting shifts in distribution, supply chain, marketing, and it's a really interesting moment for the industry to take a step back and evaluate everything that's happened in the past couple of years due to technological shifts, but also due to major events that have happened, major political or socioeconomic events that have happened that have impacted music industry at large. So,
and continues to do so, that it's constantly, like, that is happening in the moment of, like, an unforeseeable, yeah, the future is a bit cloudy or, like, hazy of not knowing really what's happening. So it is, as you're saying, like, an interesting time to reflect upon these topics.
Absolutely, yeah. We should always be reflecting on these topics every day, you know? But at the same time, like I really like, I mean, I'm biased, but obviously, but I like how the programming has been approached, where instead of looking at topics that are relevant for the music industry right now, so for example, Web3, which is like, you know, the biggest buzzword ever these days, instead of siloing the conversation around Web3, we're looking at ways where we can incorporate ideas of Web3 thinking and decentralization into larger discussions that are more relevant to different music industry stakeholders. So, for example, there's a panel on the future of live music, and in that panel, we're talking a lot about accessibility and safety and sustainability and various ways that we can just be better at doing live events. But to that extent, we're including a Web3 organizer into the mix, because, you know, the past couple of years haven't really been consuming music in the same way, and screens have completely changed the game, and there's been so many interesting sort of like digital to physical bridges that have been created in the past couple of years that it was really important for us to integrate that into the live music piece. Mm-hmm. So we're really looking at ways that we can intersect different topics in a way that feels holistic.
Right. I mean, you mentioned Web3, which is one of the themes around one of the panels or presentations during the Friday's program, titled "Enter the Music First," which is about Web3 and how that can be used in the context of music and music industry. For any listener that's not in the groove, what is Web3 and how does that relate to the theme Music Matters?
Yeah, so when I started reading about NFT culture and crypto and Web3, I was really confused because I just assumed it was about making money. About like financial investment and scandal. And I realized as I started doing a little bit more research and more reading and having conversations with people, and I've been to a few conferences now too in the US, that there's a lot more there beyond just the making money part, where like there's this whole philosophy an idea around decentralization that has really interesting implications and considerations that the music industry can learn from. I think that the music industry itself has a lot to gain in terms of ownership models, distribution models, we could have a whole conversation about royalties and, you know, everything like that. It just feels like there are a lot of things that are a little bit broken. Mm-hmm. And Web3 and its various philosophies and ideas around decentralization offer this chance to kind of rewrite it and to fix that and to give people or to kind of like decentralize and to spread ownership and to artists and to like the people themselves who are trying to create or extract output from their creation. So it's super important. And
perhaps finally an opportunity to do that for a revolution to actually happen, or that this platform or set of tools finally might exist. Because it feels like, you know, that's something that's been due for a long time, a sort of mm-hmm. shift of power to the artists. And
yeah, and I think, you know, Web3 is really just a decentralized version of the internet that takes back the power from the Googles, the Amazons, the Facebooks of the world, and puts money in people's pockets that are actually doing the work and that are creating. And it's not perfect. It's definitely not perfect. A lot of people in Web3 say it's early days, you know, which is true. But I think that in general, there's a lot that we can stand from observing those models and taking a moment and thinking about, wait a minute, the music industry needs to be fixed or needs some repair. How can we take this thinking and incorporate it in order to just, you know, get people paid and do things right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So another piece of the program, also on the Friday, embraces the DIY by elevating marginalized communities and electronic music, which is a presentation that will be held by Frankie the Kaiser Hutchinson, one of the founders behind the collective and platform Disc Woman. What can one expect from this talk?
Yeah, so Frankie has been super active in so many different facets of electronic music in the past couple of years or more, I mean, like almost a decade, and is a really inspiring person. And we've come to the over 2-year mark now of George Floyd's murder in the US, which sparked such a large string of promises from, you know, different people working in the music industry who kind of woke up and realized, okay, yeah, there is a massive diversity problem. And right now, it seems like we are used to having these conversations about diversity and inclusion being important, which is amazing, but kind of like checking in with the state of how things are, Frankie is going to kind of come in, give a sort of state of the union on things, and then explain and shed light on the work that still needs to be done, because there still is so much work that needs to be done. And the work that she's done with Disc Woman, but also Dweller, which had its second edition, I believe, earlier this year in February, which is a festival that celebrates the Black roots of dance music. Mm-hmm. She's going to use her two projects as case studies for strategies that could be easily deployed by anyone working at various capacities in the music festival.
Well, thanks, Sarah, for shining some light upon some of the programming. There's much else that is happening that week. Part of the MuTech Forum, as you said previously, running during 4 days from 23rd to 26th of August, where you'll see more of Sarah McKenzie as well.
Thank you for having me. I'll see everyone there.
That was, as previously stated, a compilation of some of the interviews for this year's edition of the MuTech Festival here in Montreal. keep an eye out on the Mutex SoundCloud page to catch some more of these interviews coming out later this month of August. That is also all for this time, but I'll catch you again soon for another episode of Pirate Block Radio here at CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hello, my name is Alia. I'm at CKUT in Montreal, 90.3 FM. Keep on rocking in the free world.
Chaud pour le Mont Stone.